Taylor Swift debrief, Shein's surprising demographic, and what's happening to live music.
I'm Maggie Zhao.
And I'm Jasmine Wallace.
And you're listening to Culture Club, where we chat about pop culture, current affairs, the internet, and our lives.
Today's episode of Culture Club is brought to you by Radical Yes, the Melbourne brand making cool shoes for modern women.
We acknowledge that the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung are the custodians of this land we are on today. We would like to pay our respects to elders past and present.
We would also like to celebrate the rich history of First Nations culture and storytelling that we're continually learning from. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Good morning, Maggie. Long time no speak.
We have indeed just spent the whole weekend together, and we are pulling up early on a Monday morning before you start work to record this. So yes, our morning voices may still be lingering.
Yes, but we had to record on a Monday morning because we want to talk about the Eras Tour, which we will get into later. Mm-hmm. But how are you feeling?
Like I'm walking on cloud nine. Yes, we will fully get into our recap of the Taylor experience, our thoughts, the big themes and things that went on during the weekend. But I just feel elated. I also had a birthday picnic, an early birthday celebration yesterday. So I'm just like literally just full of love, like no complaints.
Yeah, such a nice weekend. No, truly, I feel like I'm hungover, even though I didn't even... I had like a couple of drinks on Saturday afternoon.
wait, pause there. Because some of the girlies may have or may not have seen this incredible TikTok you put up. you trying to film a fit check, and it is like very obviously still bright outside. Like it is 4 p.m., my guess. And as you step back, you just like take a big stumble. But then it's like the most glorious girlhood moment because you're like laughing and all your friends are like laughing and helping you. And you did recover very nicely, but I was like, girl, you were drinking.
No, definitely. Well, I had a couple, right? I had, like maybe half a bottle of Prosecco and then two cocktails. So not that bad. But yeah, it was the high-heeled boots. We were on you can't tell in the video, but on like a tiny little slope going down. So when I like stood up, I just like overbalanced backwards. But yeah, caught myself. It was actually like a very sweet moment. And that was as we were walking to the stadium to go and see Taylor, obviously. But your birthday was so sweet as well. You actually hired people to like set design your birthday essentially, which is just like, again, a big girlhood moment. Men could never.
It is a big, like, that is adult. I know. It was extra. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that it wasn't. But, I mean, I kind of counterbalanced it, right? Because I was like, yes, so I hired these two lovely girls. They run Daisy Soiree. So that's like Melbourne events that they mainly hold. But you know what? It was at a public park. And I brought the food. So I'm like, it was low-key, but then high-key. It was like a nice, happy medium.
Okay, we have quite a bit to cover in this app, so let's get into it.
If you were to guess what the average Shein shopper look like, you're probably thinking it's going to be a teen or a young Gen Z girl. But according to new research, that is so not the case.
According to a new report, the average Shein shopper is actually a 35-year-old woman. And not only that, she's a 35-year-old woman who actually cares about sustainability.
So this research, which was made by UBS Securities, found that Shein's demographic is mostly made up of women with an average annual income of $65,300, that is USD. So for converting that to Australian dollars, that's almost $100,000. Australia dollars.
And these people are typically spending around $100 per month on clothing. So in another study conducted by the New Consumer and Coefficient Capital, it was also found that 52% of Shein shoppers see caring for the environment as a significant part of who they are.
Whoa.
What do you think about these stats?
That last one's really interesting because, you know, the statistic wasn't asking, oh yeah, who care? Like what percentage of people care about the environment, right? Because I would expect that number to be high. But that statistic was like, oh, who like makes caring for the environment part of their identity? And like, that's over half of Shein shoppers. So I'm like, wait, what do you mean?
That's interesting. So we found this post via the Sustainable Fashion Forum on Instagram, who is a great platform which everyone should go and check out. But they found that a recent report by Zalando found that 72% of respondents believed that reducing waste in food, plastic, and water was important, but then only 54% of people felt the same way about fashion. And then 44% of participants believe that other sustainable choices they make, like recycling or eating less meat, like compensated essentially for their less sustainable shopping choices, which is that cognitive dissonance is really interesting to me. Like, oh, I don't do this, but I do that. When we know that like fast fashion pollution especially is one of the biggest issues of our time.
Yeah, it's true. So the first stat that you brought up there, which was like, oh, you know, people care about reducing waste in food, plastic and water, but not really fashion. I find that interesting because as you were saying, like plastic and water make up fashion. But the second part, I actually don't mind too much because it's true that we can't do everything right. So it's like neither of us drive much. Yeah, maybe for the environment, but maybe for other reasons. And you know, you are vegetarian for life. I'm pescatarian. And we've all got our little things that we lean into, but then there's so much I'm sure I'm not aware of. And it's okay, I think, to lean into certain areas, but not in the way of like, okay, but if I do this and this, then I can do that. Not in that kind
black
of
and white thinking.
Swap.
I have a confession to make.
Go.
So as you know, as the audience knows, we're going to talk about Taylor Swift later on in the show. But this Taylor Swift concert experience was the first time I totally got sucked into the hype of like dressing up for the show and feeling like I wasn't going to be sparkly enough or look good enough or whatever. And it was the first time that I've ever browsed proper fast fashion websites with the thought of I'll buy something. So it was like Beginning Boutique, Shopo, you know, like that, that area. I also looked in Chadston, like in real life at H&M and stuff, but I honestly would have spent last Sunday night probably a good hour and a half just going through these websites, looking at all the sequins. And I felt so guilty. Even in the moment, I felt so guilty. But I was like, I never do that. Like I was justifying it, right? Like we all have to like justify stuff, I think, to like live in this system. I'm not excusing it, of course, but I was like, once in a lifetime event, like I'll try to find something that I can wear again, even if like, when will I ever really wear something like that out? You know, it's not exactly my style. Anyway, I ended up, because I actually had left it too late, it kind of worked out in my favor. I left it too late for stuff to even get shipped in time. It was going to be too close. So I found stuff from my own wardrobe that I already owned, and I dressed fine. I bought a couple of sparkly gems from Sports Girl. Then I bought a sequined skirt from Cider off a friend. So I guess I still like secondhand participated in fast fashion, and like I now have a 100% polyester sequin skirt in my wardrobe. But anyway, I just felt like I had to confess that I was like, no. Like the way you can like, I don't know, like justify stuff or like have this cognitive dissonance over like moments, in the same way that I just wanted to say like, I'm not sitting here on my soapbox like, oh, these 35-year-old women, like, meh. Because, like, we all make choices every single day of, like, okay, what impact are we going to have on the environment today? And, like, how we justify that I think is really interesting.
And I know that so many people would be feeling similar things to you and had similar experiences there. And it's, like, the system is set up so, like, it's so easy for us to fall into it. Like, that is the norm. Like what you're talking about there is like the normal experience because it's so easy. It's like accessible. You can just scroll on your phone. It's cheap. It's fast. All that stuff. So it's like it's so much harder to like step away from that because it's like, oh, you're actually resisting so much like desire and trends and everything. But gotta say, loves your Night 2 outfit so much. Thank you. The sparkly skirt was actually like, mwah, mwah, mwah. It looked so good. And I love that it was secondhand.
Yeah. So. I mean, yeah, in the end, I did want sparkle. I wanted to be part of that moment. So I'm glad that I bought that. Because I was actually in a shop, like sending pictures to a friend. And my friend was like, oh my God, I have a skirt just like that. You can just have it. I was like, great. Saved $70 as well. So speaking of fashion, New York City-based designer Bathsheba Hay exclusively cast women over the age of 40 in a recent New York Fashion Week show.
I like low-key didn't even realize that New York Fashion Week was really on. I feel like I haven't been keeping up with the news much, but this was a runway I saw on my feed a few times. It really sparked so many conversations and headlines because this designer purposely chose to, yeah, only cast women over the age of 40. Also, she didn't really go to modeling agencies with this request either. It was really quite sweet. So a lot of the women she cast off the street, and a lot of them were also her friends. Like, I was looking at her Instagram profile, and one of them is just like, you know, professional image of women on runway. And she's like, this is one of my best friends, blah, blah, walking on in my show. And I was like, ah, so cute.
So she also cast actress Molly Ringwald, icon, designer Victoria Bartlett, and the photographer Ming Smith. I think it is kind of sad that we are like having to make this even a segment. It shows like how outdated, I guess, the modeling industry is, how much youth sells in fashion and beauty, especially.
When we're talking about like runway models and even like editorial models, so like we're always talking about wanting to look for interesting features and people with quirky characteristics. And I feel like the casting for this was so spot on because it's like I couldn't tell who was or wasn't a professional model from a lot of the photos. These women were so striking and like had incredible features, and a lot of that is due to their age as well. So it's almost like, yeah, we don't want to applaud this for the sake of like, oh my God, yeah, she cast older women. But it was just like, oh, it was done really well. And it was a really lovely, I guess, collection of people. Another talking point that's come out of this is the fact that a lot of the women, again, I was reading an interview with a designer, and this wasn't intentional, but when like the models rocked up, everyone had a moment backstage which was like, oh my God, so many of us have gray hair, like how nice. There was a great article in Allure. It was written by Nicola Dallison, and it's called Put More Gray Hair on the Runways, You Cowards.
Love that. I really like this part from the piece, and it says, when you no longer identify with the images of plump cheeks, textureless foreheads, and smooth under eyes that seem to be in every advertising campaign, on every popular album cover, and of course on every runway, you realize just how infrequently you see women over 40 represented in media in a way that values their aesthetics, not just their wisdom. Women of all ages deserve to be respected for their characteristics beyond the physical, but society often approaches only younger women with unabashed, leering desire.
The author continues, meanwhile, older women are met either with a backhanded sense of pity about their loss of beauty or an ass-kissing attitude that suggests their life experience compensates for their lack of a youthful appearance.
And also what is weird to me about the whole industry is that women over 40 are the ones with the money, right?
Yeah. Like,
I know that like women over 40 typically have families and mortgages and stuff compared to like women in their 20s. But in terms of like earning power and like in general, like accumulating wealth, they're probably the ones who are buying these like fashions that are on show at New York Fashion Week compared to like someone like you or I. So why wouldn't you want to like represent the demographic you're selling to? It's just so stupid.
Jazz, I'm so glad you've recently been introduced to one of my favorite footwear brands, Radical Yes.
Yes, you know I love a fun shoe, and Radical Yes makes ultra cool ones. I always see you wearing their loafers, right?
Yes, guilty as charged. I do love a good loafer, and you know my partner Tom is almost never seen without one of their crossbody bags.
Very excitingly for us, Radical Yes is sponsoring our pod for the next few weeks. We can't wait to tell you more about the label and its glorious and gorgeous pieces.
They're the founders of what they've dubbed as flat shoe liberation, because we should all agree, let's wear shoes that are both cute and practical.
And practical shoes does not have to equal boring. Have you seen the silver ballet flats and baby blue loafers?
Oh my God, they are so you. To get to know more about Radical Yes, you can find them on Instagram at at Radical Yes and online at radicalyes.com.au. Alrighty, it is debrief time. We are going to be talking about our Taylor Swift Eras Tour experience. I went to night one with Jazz and a couple of other friends, and Jazz got to go also to night two. So we've got like multi-perspective experience.
Yes, I very, very luckily was able to go twice. Context, I bought VIP back in June thanks to our friend Kitch's Amex card. We got the pre-sale. She's not a fan, but she's like, hell yeah, I'll get the points.
So true.
And I spent a lot of money on my night two tickets, like the most I have ever and probably will ever spend on a concert ticket. My justification, not that I need to justify it, but I've never seen her live before. Obviously, huge experience in the year of our Lord 2024.
Honestly, can I just say, I know it's a lot of money and like very lucky that we are at a stage where we can splash out on like big purchases like that. But honestly, after watching Taylor paying $230 for AA Reserve, which was incredible, I was like, I would maybe have splashed out on VIP tickets because I was like, to pay for that experience of being close up as well. Because as we'll get into, like, oh, she was amazing, but she was a tiny dot. Like, I was squinting at the stage and mainly watching the screen, you know? So it's a different
experience. And yeah, the night we went with Mags was, yeah, pure luck that our friend Grace, she just must have good luck or something that she got those general tickets.
Karma.
So yeah, it was really interesting seeing, like, looking through the screen on the first night. And then it was actually, fun fact, I don't know if this is interesting, it was actually louder when we were up in the stands. And I think it was because like the sound was reverberating off like the back glass and the concrete we were surrounded by compared to when I was like out on the floor, which I just found interesting. I thought it was going to be the same both nights.
To stop us rambling about this for forever, let's just pick some of our favorite moments and also things that were unexpected about the show. Okay. What comes to mind for you?
I think my favorite thing was realizing how much Taylor Swift has soundtracked my life. And the first night I was definitely more emotional. Like you would have seen, there were certain songs, especially like when Fearless came on, I was literally like tears streaming down my face. I could barely like sing. I was just like, I can't believe that I am standing here watching the person who I have like watched since 2007 on stage in front of me for the first time. And then, yeah, you just kind of like, as she goes through all the different genres and eras, like you're just like, whoa, I remember where I was like this time and how old I was here and like what I was doing in my life when this album came out, especially the pandemic albums. I was like so emo both nights during those albums. So I'd say that was probably a highlight. Like, obviously I knew that and that's why I paid so much money to go see her, but I was also like, it was just like almost healing to like see it all laid out in front of you. And also just her performance was just like the way she just, everything is like timed as you would expect from the best performer in the world, but like the way she doesn't miss a second, she's just on it. And the way she like, during certain eras, she won't have like a huge, you know, sometimes she has like longer breaks than others, but sometimes it's dead set, like 10 seconds, not even between songs. And you're just like, how the hell do you do this? Like we were saying that like on Saturday morning when we woke up, we were like ruined just from like the experience, let alone being on stage and doing it.
Yeah. I like went to the shops and I looked so hungover. Yeah. I didn't drink anything, but I was like, I look deceased. Okay. Okay. So many points to yours. I so resonate. Being able to witness these songs at our bigger age now, but being able to connect with our younger selves in that process, you know, like so many songs. Oh my God, I'm getting emotional. But so many of the songs, I think especially when they've got like numbers in the titles, it's even more obvious. But like, you know, I remember like listening to 15 when I was like 13 or like 12 years old, being like, oh my God, that's gonna be like such a big age to be, or like even before I turned 22, like all that stuff. Oh, so special. You, okay, the other thing that I loved that was low-key unexpected was you you got to experience a different side of Maggie where I was making this like weird hoarse noise with my like with my throat. I was like, oh, like I just like didn't know how to, I didn't know how to control my like bodily reactions, honestly,
to songs. It was really cool the way like music is so powerful. I know it sounds freaking obvious, but yeah, there were moments where, because I actually avoided all spoilers of the show, and I'm going to try and not spoil it for anyone else who hasn't seen it yet, but I didn't go see the Eras Tour movie on purpose because I was like, I'm again paying so much money to see her live. I'm not going to like go and spend $20 in the cinema to experience it first. And then even on TikTok, like I knew certain songs, I knew certain parts or like outfits or whatever, but I didn't know what order they were in. So like when a certain era would start, you and I were just like almost doubled over. Like we were like holding our knees. Yeah. Like, oh my God, I can't deal. I can't. Like this is crazy. It was just so surreal. And like, I'm very, very lucky and privileged to have seen it that second night to be like, the difference was like the first night was almost like cathartic, like crying and like with you, like screaming and stuff. And just taking all in, I barely took any videos aside from when she announced the alternate cover art and the bonus track, which was insane to witness that live. And then seeing all the Americans like freaking out on TikTok that we got it. I was like, ha, ha, ha. Like you got all the Eras Tours first. And then second night was like more of a party, like being actually seeing her with my own eyes. Yeah. I did say this on Instagram, but there was a point where she made actual eye contact with me and I felt it in my soul. I know that we're like fangirling so hard right now, but it took me like 10 seconds to register that she'd actually made eye contact with me. Cause even when I'm at concerts and I'm filming, I still try to like look through, like not look through the screen. I look with my eyes and just like I frame the shot and then look with my eyes. So I was kind of like holding the camera just above my head, but still looking at her. I was standing on the aisle at that point because we were swapping seats, so everyone got a different view. And yeah, she like pointed and like looked at me, and it was during Folklore as well, which is like so witchy and stuff. And I was like, oh my God. And then it was not until she walked to the other side of the stage that I turned to my friends and I was like, she just made eye contact with me. And I know that's like, I'm sure people who aren't fans are listening to this like, oh my God, she's just like a woman. She's just a singer, like whatever. But like being around that fan culture, it was so special. And I don't want to say a once in a lifetime event because hopefully, you know, we see her live again, but it was a really special moment to be a part of and like getting swept up in that almost mania. Our friend Grace, who we went with, well, I went with both nights and you went with on the first night. She was on ABC. She's an ABC journalist and she was being interviewed by ABC Sydney. She's kind of like the unofficial Taylor Swift expert on the ABC, and the interviewer or the producer was like, this is almost Beatlemania level. Well, it is Beatlemania level, but for like a new generation, and it's a woman instead of a four-piece band. And like to see the city come alive, like just walking around the city knowing like people, seeing people in merch and knowing people, most people going, was like a really really cool experience and genuinely like one of the highlights of my life.
Oh, I completely agree. It was honestly so special. Oh, I actually had someone who follows me. Like I was at a cafe in South Yarra the morning of, and like a group of like six women walked in with like merch on, and I was like, oh, they've come from somewhere and they are here. And then one of them came up to me and was like, oh, like it's so nice. Like I follow you. I see you're going to the concert. And then we had a really nice bonding moment over Taylor Swift. It's the most like just everything. In general, just so magical. I think we keep returning to that word as well because it's just like, I can't even fathom. The other thing I want to bring up in terms of unexpected, right, because Ovi, I know she's an incredible performer, but I was shocked that she was giving like 110% to the whole performance. Because like I was saying that she doesn't need to. Like her fan base is so strong that she could give like a kind of subpar performance and people would still be like going wild over it. But the way that she was so engaged, and I told you as well, I was like, it's not just her dancing or her singing, whatever, but it's like when she like looks or she flicks her hair, everything is so intentional and so powerful and like holds so much weight. I was like, that is a mega, mega, mega like pop star, like in her purest form, I was really astounded by just like how much she gave. So yeah, absolutely loved it.
And it was really crazy that like everything that she does during the concerts that isn't part of the norm, like whether it's part of the set list or part of like the normal kind of speeches, I guess, or talking that she makes in between songs, it was newsworthy. Like when she would change little, like, I don't know, in Never Getting Back Together, one of her dancers was like, yeah, nah, that made the news. And it's like, imagine being that powerful that like if you go, if you even make a face, like, or like the secret song she chose, everyone was like, oh my God, this album is going to be all about Joe. And, you know, I think that I saw some theories. It was like, I think Joe Alwyn cheated on Taylor because of the secret songs that she played in Melbourne. Like, this adds up and this adds up. And I was like, wow, everything that she does is like scrutinized and is newsworthy, which is shows like how mega famous she is.
Yeah, actually, to be honest, I find it really funny because she does treat her performances sometimes like press conferences, and then we are like the willing press that does free publicity for her, because like, yeah, the alternate cover and like the name of the Bolter, the song, also night three when she's like moving forward these acoustic sessions, you know, I can be doing mashups and repeats, like I'm not limited. I'm like, we are the press for her, which is like obviously fine, but I'm like, oh my gosh, like the girlies were working hard. Obviously we have a few friends that work in media who had to be like live tweeting and like recording things during the performance. I popped on TikTok afterwards and there were so many videos that were posted during the event from like normies, right? And I'm like, oh my God, people are like,
it's like live
doing work.
No, I was saying, I was walking home, you know, I knew that the news of the album would have already been online, but I was walking home and I was like, okay, I'll post like some clips. And like you posted a clip to Culture Club TikTok, and there was like an analysis already from an American, oh no, sorry, it was a British person talking about like all the secret songs of night one and like the fact that the new song is called The Bolter and like what this means. And I'm walking home from the concert and this is like someone who lives on the other side of the planet is like getting on that news, or like knows, is already analyzing that news before I'm even home from the concert. It just made me be like, holy shit, like the world we live in is so fast and instant and globalized that it's not like the day after that is the news. It's like that minute. And I was purposely not uploading. I had my phone on airplane mode to save battery. And I knew that I was like, oh, I'm going to be late to like post anything on TikTok, because like people were doing it in the freaking stadium. It was really, really crazy to witness in real life. Even though we work in media and we are on social media and all that stuff, I think like the Taylor phenomenon was, it's like another level.
Yeah. And I fell victim to it. Like that night I was like, and I wanted to, right? It's really fun sharing all these videos, but I felt that pressure. I was like, oh my God, I am going to be posting like Sabrina Carpenter's cover of Hopelessly Devoted to You. And I was like, I need to get there early, like post it. Did I do it on the way home maybe? Or like when I was in bed or something like that? Like so quick.
Yeah, I think you did on the way home. Like did that video do well?
Yeah, like relatively well. And like the one on Culture Club also did well. Sorry to get behind the scenes with you all. But the weird thing is like the next morning I was like, oh, should I post that video of Taylor announcing the album to Culture Club's Instagram? And I was like, oh, maybe that's already too late.
Yes, no, so
it was like 12 hours later.
Me too. I was like, oh, I'm not even gonna, I've obviously posted the photo, the TikTok of me falling over, but I haven't posted like any. It's already too late. I missed it, which is just insane. frankly exhausting, to be honest. But anyway, this kind of, I think, leads us into our next topic, which is the conversation around the music industry in general at the moment and how content has essentially changed the music industry.
Yeah. And this conversation, like this segment on Culture Club that we're talking about right now, came about really organically because so many things have happened in the last few weeks. And it's really interesting to have this conversation on the backdrop of Taylor, who almost like defies the odds in this regard. So kind of like put Taylor to the side, but for one, Groove in the Mood, which is an incredible major regional music festival here in Australia, has cancelled this year's festival after a week of tickets being on sale.
Yeah, this was huge, huge news and very sad news as well because, you know, in the last few years, last 4 years, we've had the bushfires over one summer, a pandemic for 2 years, which made festivals pretty much impossible. And now we have a cost of living crisis, which I think is the reason that Groovin got cancelled. Like Groovin is particularly as well, I think, for like younger people, like people in their teens, like early 20s. And I guess people aren't prioritizing those experiences, but I guess, can we claim that after we've just spoken about Taylor Swift and how many people were there? Like, what do you think the difference is?
Yeah, you make such a good point of like all the different factors that have impacted music festivals here in Australia. Also the climate crisis, but yeah, you've mentioned bushfires, but there was also floods and everything. What is it? I mean, everyone on social media being vocal is like, the lineup sucks. But tell me 1 year where people haven't been saying that. Like you can never exactly please anyone in terms of music lineups. So that annoys me. Also, Z-Feed found that ticket prices hadn't increased that much anyway. Like the starting prices were still pretty on par with other years. So what is it? And I don't think it's one definitive answer. This news did make me really sad though, because this was the first festival I ever went to. And I've been a few times. Like, I love it.
Yeah, it's so fun. I think as well, because it's also regional, right? So you may have people from the city. I'm not saying that there's no young people in the country, but like, if you have people from the city or like the coast who want to go, it's not just the ticket price. It's accommodation, it's travel to get there, it's food and drinks,
true,
outfits. When you add all that up, it's never just like the $150 ticket. It's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars, which is cool. Like that's the experience. And we know lots of people have just spent a lot of money on Taylor Swift, but I guess people are being really picky and choosy with like the experiences that they spend their money on now versus like, oh yeah, I want to go to like every festival, every gig. It's like, I'll go to one festival a year and it's not going to be Groove in the Mood this year, I guess, is my theory. Yeah. This is just speculation.
Yeah. And even speaking on that regional point, like I read an ABC article yesterday and I forgot from which regional town, but the Perth, like a mayor or someone there was talking about like the massive economic loss that comes from cancelling a show and festival like this for a town. Because you are right, like a comm, like a transport, all that stuff feeds into like their tourism essentially. So cutting that off also sucks. I see young people, like I see some young people and how they save to spend their money at concerts, right? Like my little sister is kind of someone like that. She really values live performance and those experiences, but it's like a lot of her money. Like it's a big investment.
Yeah.
So you've got to be willing to make that sacrifice. And totally. I don't know how many people are.
Yeah, 100%. My family's the same. We've always valued live experiences, spending your money on that, especially as music lovers. But yeah, something has to give, especially when everything else is getting so expensive. So it's really, really sad. But this kind of feeds into the conversations that are happening online. And we want to highlight this piece by Simran Pasricha for Z-Feed. And it's called "The Latest Victim of Everything is Content, Festivals and Live Music."
Simran is amazing, like close friend of mine, love her work. And Z-Feed have really been like absolutely smashing it, especially in these conversations around content and live music. So highly, highly recommend tuning in, reading and subscribing to them. So she talks about this kind of melting pot of reasons why live music isn't what it used to be. And for many of the reasons we said, plus things like, you know, there's a lack of concert etiquette. She had this part in her piece, which I really like, which we will read now. Dynamic and vibrant, festivals are like immersive content farms that provide multiple days of content opportunities. You're guaranteed at least one really great photo and a chance at internet virality alongside seeing your favorite artist perform live. In a world where one great video can launch a career, it's a pretty good deal.
I think this harks back to the point we were just making about Taylor Swift. My whole For You page is Taylor at the moment. And my sister isn't she said this herself. She was like, I'm not a Swiftie, but my whole feed is like Melbourne Taylor Swift. And also speaking before about like posting immediately, our friend Grace's Taylor videos have gone viral and she's now bloody like managing the comment section of her freaking videos because yeah, like these videos are able to like go viral so well because it's like a joint experience. It's so many people. It's like being, I think it's like being in on something, like you're part of what's community for one, but you're like part of something.
Yeah, it's true. And it's like, if you're part, like, I think there's a line between being part of something and being a part of like a cultural experience, but then just like capturing content for it. Mm. So Simran also writes, if we now view live music as content opportunity rather than a cultural experience, we need different reasons to buy tickets. Is the venue aesthetic? Can you expect outrageous antics from the artists or fans to film and post? And now that others are guaranteed to film and post for you, is it worth paying for something you'll get to experience for free on your phone after the show?
That's an interesting point, but I don't think you can compare seeing something through a screen versus actually being there.
Yeah, completely. I feel like people do go in person to have that experience, but in a flip side of things, a lot of the time I wasn't filming at the concert because I was like, oh, other people get better angles. So I was like, yes, outsourcing that labor.
Outsource the labor. That's so funny. Yeah, same, especially for the secret songs and stuff. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to film these. Someone else will film and like, yeah, the whole thing from like row A. But I do think it's a really interesting and unique phenomenon that is only really come about in the 2020s. I wouldn't even say in the late 20-teens it was happening. It's really a TikTok thing, in my opinion, even if we are posting on Instagram. But yeah, I spent 2 hours last night going through my photos and videos from Taylor and firstly sending them to the people I was with, then curating all the photos and videos, choosing the best, thinking about which one should go first. I'm totally exposing myself here. Which one should go first? Which one, like which video should I post? I was literally on my phone for 2 hours doing that. Like it was my job and I was like,
fair.
But I was also like, I need to do it tonight. Otherwise I'm going to be like, everyone's going to get bored of like all the Taylor content. So like, I'm going to do it tonight and post the most stories I think I've ever posted in my life.
Which is still a very humble, conservative number.
Oh, like really?
Okay. Oh, girly, I posted like 30 photos just of myself yesterday on my story. And, like, just from different angles. Like, you're speaking to the wrong person.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was like the content part of it. Like we did basically a photo shoot outside the stadium, but it's also tangible as well because, and it's for the memories as well because Grace was like, we should have a craft day and like print off all our photos. I have so many gems left over and we can make photo albums. I was like, this is so awesome. So it's also for our own like memories and keepsakes and whatever. But yeah, there was definitely a moment of like, I have to get the shot because I want to post this on Instagram.
No, same. Girl, I like, we did our photo shoot setting up and then I was like, no, Jazz, take a photo of me on the grass sitting down.
Yeah.
Like, we went for it because the mindset is like, well, you're only here like for the night. Like you like, let's make the most of it. Yeah. And the most of it sometimes looks like getting the photos, getting the videos to commemorate. So yeah, like.
No regrets.
We see both sides.
Yeah.
No regrets. It is now time for our recommendations. Jazz, you're up first. What is something that you've read, listened to, or watched recently that you want to bring to the table?
So this week I read The Price of Being First. I made modeling history, then the internet made me wish I hadn't. And it was a piece for The Cut by model Paloma Elsesser. And it basically speaks about the aftermath of her winning Model of the Year at the Fashion Awards in December of last year. She charts like the way that she was praying basically that she didn't win because of like the responsibility that would come from having the title of Model of the Year. And also, oh, sorry, context for people who don't know Paloma, she is a plus size model. So yeah, that responsibility and weight of being a spokesperson for like, you know, plus size people. She explains that like, obviously when she was nominated, she was really happy. And after she won, she was really happy. And the day after, she was happy. But soon after, she started getting hate comments, people having conversations over like whether she should have won or not. Like, she's a diversity pick and real models work so hard to have the bodies that they have. You just get to sit around eating cheeseburgers. That those comments were coming through. Even Kanye West, Fuel the Fire, alleging that she was part of a conspiracy to, quote, push obesity to us. So it's a pretty full-on article and still quite recent. Like, if this only happened in December, obviously she's still going through it. But I'll read out a quote and try to not give the whole article away because I definitely recommend. Paloma says, "It's become evident that many of the same people who talk about making these huge strides in representation are also painfully resistant to change. And what about my role in their narrative? The industry may carve out space for a select few names like mine, but it firmly shuts the door on countless others. The pride in being part of a list of firsts is fading. Being the first curve model for a campaign loses its significance when the brand fails to open its doors to the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. This personal essay, I think, harks back to the conversation we have actually spoken about on the podcast as well, and that we've been seeing for probably the last 6 to 12 months, which is that thin is back in quotation marks. The way it feels like diversity has like, or representation has almost gone backwards. She says, "Yet over the last few years, fat phobia has become acceptable again. Representation in media has become less alluring to folks, and its purpose is being reduced to, quote, woke ideology."
Great point there. For sure, fat phobia is so ingrained everywhere that it is like impossible not to encounter it day to day. And it is so just normalized that it doesn't get that much pushback just because it's little comments, little quips. So yeah, can't ever imagine being in Paloma's position as, you know, someone that people would say like, oh, she's broken through the mold. Like, she's an incredible model. She's garnered a lot of like success commercially, or like, you know, she's like a really well-known supermodel. But, you know, hearing about the quotes that you just read out, I'm like, the pressure on her shoulders is just immense.
Maggie, what are you recommending for us today?
I have a novel to recommend. It's been like, ooh, maybe 6 weeks in the works. It's taken me to finish. And that is A Little Life by Hanya Yanahari. It's 720 pages. It's a massive fiction novel that came out in 2015. Like, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard the name, if not read it themselves. Kind of what you get to know before you've ever read this book is like, people are always like, oh my God, it's so sad, it's so depressing, make sure you read this when your mental health is okay. Like, and I back that up.
Wow.
It took me a year to read. I got it for my birthday, as in like, I had it on my bookshelf for a year before I ended up picking it up. Our lovely friend Tiff got it for me for my birthday. And I
happy birthday. Here's the most depressing book ever written.
Seriously, I was like, well, thank you. Thank you. Tears are the secondary present. But truly, I love this. I'll probably have like an extended review on my TikTok, but the quick and dirty of it is that it's such a moving, incredible book. The world building is incredible. It centers on like, I would say like 4 male friends, kind of, but it kind of focuses on 2 of them more specifically. I'm not going to give anything away, but you kind of follow these people throughout their life, like from college and as they age. And the biggest takeaway from this as well is like, I thought it'd be the most daunting read. Like, I'd be slogging, like I'd be suffering as I read it and like wanting it to be over, slash like it would be a really tough read, but it really wasn't. Obviously, there are really strong content warnings and themes needed, like that I need to know, like self-harm, suicide, abuse, just like everything under the sun. But it was actually such a beautifully written book and I just wanted to keep reading. Like I was reading at night in bed, which I don't do much. I was thinking about it all the time. Like it was such a joy to read despite like how heavy it was.
Wow. Okay. That's good to know because I'm not the biggest fan of like super dark novels or films. So I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it in the end and like it was worth the length and stuff.
Oh, like completely. Like I will read it again one day, but I like almost envy the side of myself who got to read it for the first time.
Like, wow. Glowing.
Oh, I loved it.
Wow.
Glowing review. Glowing review. I think I gave it 5 stars.
My gosh.
Well, that brings us to the end of the episode.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for indulging us in our Taylor Swift memories. And we'll chat with you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.